I should apologise for anybody watching as well that the room that I'm in right now just looks like shit.
I love, you sent me a thing where like the tiles are falling off the walls, like the acoustic tiles, right, are coming off.
Dude, it's so bad. It's so bad. It's like, yeah, so the original idea was to move from this. I was going to go somewhere else. So I was going to go into a garden office that we were going to get built over there. And then, anyway, so all of that went up the Swanee. So now I'm staying. So all of this was actually, I was like, it was falling off the wall and I didn't care. It was like, yeah, whatever, et cetera, et cetera. But now, apparently, Lisa's like, oh, you're staying in here now. So I'm staying in here. And
you've been banished. And then,
so I've got boxes of, just check this out, it's just sort of like just massive boxes of crap everywhere, so it should be,
because because you guys are doing a big remodel, like what's why are you in that space now?
We were doing the garage, so we were gonna get that. I do apologize for everybody's like, why do you want to know about your garage, Scott? Anyway, I'm going to get the garage converted. We were going to get the garage converted. What was going to happen? I can't even remember what was going to happen. But the garage is getting converted into a room. That was going to be like an area for Lisa to have like a gym and stuff. I was going to go somewhere in the garden, in a little garden shed.
Yeah.
And then the kids were going to have this as their learning space, because we homeschool the kids.
Yep.
And what's ultimately happened is I'm not going to the garden shed. I am staying in here. Lisa has managed to get her running machine and Peloton through there. So we've managed to squeeze those in somewhere else. And then the kids are going to have the new space. And the reason why is because we got the new space done in the where the garage converted to this new space. And it was too nice. I said to Lisa, I was like, the kids need somewhere freaking awesome to learn. It's really important awesome. So I was like, we've got to take one for the team. We've got to give this to the kids, and this can be their learning space. So they're inspired.
Oh, look at you, dude. Oh, it's Dad of the Year. Dad of the Year Awards.
Yeah. Well, so that was the methodology behind it. I was like, we've got to give that space to the kids, build it out so it's amazing for those guys. And then we're going to have to just sort of like put up with the, you know, just, so I'm staying here and Lisa's just going to go next door.
Dude, this is making me feel so terrible right now. Inadvertently, you're making me feel so terrible, because currently we have just moved house, as you would say, in the UK, right? We're 10 miles away, still in Minneapolis or outside of Minneapolis. But I'm still working. I mean, this looks like the space that I've always worked in, because it is. I still have access to this. But all of the furniture and all of the nice things are gone out of the room outside of this room in the like living area.
Yeah.
And that's where my kids are parked right now.
Like, Dad, do we have to go back to the old house where there's nothing in it anymore?
I'm like, yeah, you do. Daddy's got to record a podcast.
And mate, I'm sure they'll forgive you, man. I'm sure they'll forgive you.
I gotta take him out to ice cream or something. I'm feeling real guilty about it right now. But I mean, yeah, dude, I was just telling you before we started this, you know, it's been such a whirlwind, but we just moved, right? And trying to work between two spaces. You're actually, I would say you're a master of it, because you've got the home space that you work in, but then you also have, you know, SBL HQ ways away from your house, right? Where you go and you work with Alan, you make the YouTube videos. I have found it this morning very difficult to work between two spaces, right? Like, I have this, but some of the stuff I've already moved over. And I mean, man, like getting up and thinking like, okay, and one thing can sink you, like, especially when you're doing everything yourself, like, oh, you don't have the lightning cable that goes from your interface to your Mac? Well, that's it. You're dead.
Dead.
Sorry. No recording. Dead.
Yeah, man. Yeah. That happened to me today. I was, and that's because we've been moving around some stuff. Some stuff is over in the other studio and all of that shit. And I was, I had to make a YouTube video this morning. I didn't have a light. I didn't have a camera. I didn't have a memory card. And I was like, I still did it. Dude, you just got to improvise. I was like, okay, I'm going to film this on my camera. I mean, on my phone. So I did it all on my phone. And then I did it, and then I messaged Lydia straight after, uploaded it to YouTube, and I sent a message to Lydia, shout out to Lydia, and I was like, Lydia, I'm so sorry that this YouTube video looks so pants, but I had to do it on my phone. Lydia's head of content, I mean, at SPL, if anybody's wondering.
Yeah. Lydia's like,
Yeah.
Like, she Lydia is crafting, like, she's crafting the perfect strategy, and then we just come in and just like the Kool-Aid guy, oh yeah, and like knock down
dropping
walls.
Dog turds everywhere. Yeah. Like,
man, I mean, I will say though, I really like sometimes. I mean, today I didn't like it, but when I was in Leeds, I liked being in that hotel room with almost no gear and then still having to make some stuff. Like, I made a couple of videos in that space. And it was really fun for me to do that, because sometimes working with less is a really fun challenge. Like, if you have to get the thing done, sometimes working with less is cool. It's a fun way to do it.
100%, man. I kind of like the guardrails. It just keeps you in, and it keeps you... I just like, yeah, when you haven't got enough stuff... And you've got zero time to do it in. That's the funnest and most stressful time for me. It's sort of like, yeah. And I say that, like, honestly, it's always like, it's quite stressful because I really need to get it done. But also I kind of like the pain of like trying to figure out, like today was a perfect example. I had to do this YouTube video. I didn't have any gear. And then I needed to get Nick, shout out to Nick. Nick was like, oh, we need a video for Saturday. And I was like, oh, and then I was like, oh, I've got some footage. Just stay right there. And like, I messaged him and I edited it and then I uploaded it, and he's like, yeah, wicked, great. And so I kind of like the carnage.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I know we've talked a little bit about, you know, our tendencies and procrastination. I mean, it actually would be cool to do an episode like straight up on procrastination. But for me, I have thought of myself for a long time as a great procrastinator. If there's something that I'm really good at, it is procrastinating. But I think part of the reason is because I procrastinate until I can't anymore on certain things, not on everything, but on certain things I do. But I like the feeling, and I don't know if you're the same way, but I like the feeling of the fire being lit. You know, like under my ass, like if I'm procrastinating and then no, actually this deadline is here. It's here. I will wait until it gets up to that. And then I feel that fire and then I'm like, whoa, and then I'm going for it. And I feel good and excited and I perform well under that pressure and I go for it. And then hooray. And then you make it and you're like, ah,
give me an example. But like, yeah, give me an example of when you procrastinated and when you felt good.
Recording projects or like prepping for gigs sometimes. Like, I'm like, oh, I need to learn 40 songs for this thing. And it's a month away. Oh, I have an ocean of time. My friend Jeremy likes to say, oh, that's an ocean of time. I love that. I'm like, oh, no problem. And then like it comes up. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's 2 weeks away. Okay. Yep. Less of an ocean. More of a lake. That's a lake of time. 1 week away. Ooh, yeah, it's a pond. Yeah. This is a pond of time. And then.
What? And do you like this procrastination? Do you like it?
I like the feeling of then having to execute in short order. Like, I like the feeling of, I now need to really double down and do this. And then I like making the coffee and like just diving in and really doing it. I mean, there's so many things that I've done that for. And the problem for me, I wonder if you're the same. I don't know. I'd love to know. I'm going to stop talking in a minute. The problem
it's
for
good,
me
man. Keep going.
Is that it has consequences for the rest of my life. Like, it's a really selfish way to operate, actually, because then, you know, like if there's family plans or something, I mean, I try not to do this, right? But then it's like, oh, well, no, now I have to pour myself into this thing that's on fire. Well, it wouldn't have had to been on fire. It's fucking my problem. You know, I created the fire. Like, I set the fire by procrastinating. But it's like a drug to like put that fire out, you know? Do you feel that?
I feel addicted sometimes to to what I was talking about before, about that sort of like that craziness of like serious guardrails in terms of what's available at the time.
Yes.
But you've got to make it work. And there's various I guess examples of that jump to mind for me. One was this morning when I had that stuff to do. Another one was we did like a promotion recently, and something broke, a technical thing broke. So I had to do an insane amount of videos in zero time and had to publish them on, I did like 7 days worth of YouTube. I'm kind of addicted to that in a certain way because I find inaction really painful. I find inaction.
Yes.
So I'm not a great procrastinator, actually. I kind of like hate it about, I don't like procrastinating about things.
Yes.
Even though I do it, I think everybody does it. So I don't enjoy procrastinating, but I will say that I'm addicted to just making things happen and maybe sort of get caught up in the, what's the word? Do you know when it's just crazy? Like it's just carnage. I don't like it, but I like to know that I can operate really well in them situations. Maybe that's it, actually. I'm just kind of thinking this through.
Surviving.
I find it a kick knowing that I can operate well in situations that, you know, I don't know, normal people might sort of like want to curl up and cry.
Do you remember telling me that if we were ever in a plane and we like crashed in the mountains or in the jungle, like
I'm gonna eat some meat.
you basically told me like run. like first it's the monkeys, but then after the monkeys are gone, it's you, Allison.
I can remember watching. There was that really famous film, wasn't there, where there's a plane crash and there's sort of like, you know, like a lot of people, unfortunately, you know, perish in the crash, and their bodies there in the snow and stuff, and then this is one of these times I'm sort of like, I shouldn't say this out loud, but I'm going to do it anyway. And part of the individuals, you know, a certain amount of individuals on the plane survived, and they're starving. And there's this whole debate onto whether they should, you know, took into the deceased, basically, you know, because they're going to die.
Into the deceased. I just imagine, right, the napkin. Whoop, dude, just let's tuck in. You know, you scoot your chair up, dude. You just scoot your chair up to the buffet, to the human buffet.
So there's this whole debate. So I can't see, my eyes are watering so much. There's this whole debate of like, should they or shouldn't they? They're going to die, you know. And I can remember watching this film when I was like younger and thinking, I, what's the problem? Just like.
Yeah, right. You're like, you know, let's
grab
go.
A knife and fork. Let's go.
I mean, I bet in real time there was less of a debate. I bet they had to build the debate in to the narrative of the film.
For sure.
Oh, should we? Shouldn't we? I mean, man, faced in that situation, who would... who would choose not a tasty morsel?
The real debate was who goes first.
Exactly. Yes. Oh, dude. Yeah. Oh. So you want to tuck in to the drama, dude. You want to tuck in.
To the
process, to action, right? I think for me, there is a drug of when the time is short and I have to just dive in. And so sometimes procrastination for me is a way to access that drug.
Mm.
But it is not healthy. Dude, it's not a healthy way to operate. It's just how I've always operated. I mean, there were times like I would like to think that I'm more regimented about making videos now, but I remember when I first came on for SBL, there'd be times where I would just be pacing in my space, thinking about how I was going to structure the video. And then I was, you know, like drinking coffee, and like it would get into, And I was thinking about it in my head. So there's prep going on, but I wasn't executing yet. And then it would get to like midnight. And it was like, this is it. You know what I mean? And then I remember the people on the video. Team would be like, yeah, yeah, you know? And then I remember people on the team being like, Ian, you uploaded this at 3 a.m. your time. Like what's, but I'm trying to get better about it. But it's just sort of the way I like to work. I've always been a night owl. I always like to stay up late. Rest of the house is quiet. I don't feel like I'm kind of like, ah, oh, like my family can hear me working. Like, oh, I love the vibe of like feeling like it's just me, you know, and I can kind of be myself, say the things I want to say without, even though my kids and wife are cool. They know what I do. They know how goofy I am. And, but you know, like when you're alone, you can do things like versus like with a videographer, you're a little more at your like true self is a little more at arm's length. Don't you feel that?
Mm. Oh you know? Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Versus
yeah.
like when there's people around. I mean, I do the dumbest stuff when it's just me. And then some of that stuff makes it into the videos, like for better or for worse, you know, but I would like, I mean, a goal for me would be to like access that same feeling on them, like give me the drug, but I just want it in a more routine fashion. I don't know if that's possible, but boy, I hope it is.
It's tough, isn't it? I think that we all have different ways of operating. I'm always continuously trying to change how I operate. It's a whole rabbit hole we shouldn't go down today, but yeah, I am trying to change. I'm trying to be like less, what's the word? I guess, yeah, less procrastination, more doing.
Yeah.
And like, and just, but going, just go, go.
Yeah.
Do you know I mean? Just figure it, just go. Like, stop thinking about it so much, just go. And do the thing, but also better, you know, getting better with my time as well. Like, I've just got, I'm juggling a lot of stuff. I'm juggling a lot of stuff, man. I'll tell you when procrastination kicked me in my ass recently.
My wife told me the other day.
Dude, there was this amazing Oliva Capolo bass for sale on Talk Bass.
Yeah.
It was shell pink. Yes. And it was like, had white pickups and this beautiful jazz bass dude, fire string. It just looked awesome. And yes. I messaged the guy over a couple of days, and last night I messaged him and I said, hey, will you take $8,000 for it? He was like, 8125 and it's yours. And in my mind I was like, wicked. And then I went to bed and didn't message him because I'm a knob. And I woke up to send the message and it had sold.
No!
And there's no reason other than I'm just a bit of a dick to why I didn't. I think that I just wanted to kind of mull it over in my sleep or something. I've got no idea. Yes. I was just I'll send him that message in the morning. I wanted to message him in the morning. Mistake. Yeah. Sold. It just looked killer. And he was like, he wrote a post and he was just like, this is like a once in a lifetime bass. And I read the copy and I was like, oh, I believe him. This is such a killer bass. Yeah, it was good. Did you see it?
That bass. Hey, listen. No shade. Here, let me tell you why it's fine. Can I tell you why it's fine? Let me tell you why it's fine.
Tell me why it's fine.
I'm going to tell you. No shade to anyone who loves the Oliva Capolo. Oliva Capolo. I don't know if I'm saying that right. The AC bass. But the headstock, to me, looks like a foot that has been swollen from a plane ride. It does, dude. It does. It looks like a foot with a gym sock on it that has been a long transatlantic flight, dude. A long flight.
That's a long haul.
And had all the meals and all the drinks and then came off the plane and was swollen. And I don't like that.
Like, legit, it does look like that. It does look like that. Have you tried one?
No, look, I would love to try one. I think I could get over that. I have always had a real mean girl vibe towards headstocks. I've always had internally, and now I guess it's external.
It's the ugliest headstock. It is. It is. Ugly mofo. That thing is like, I'm Jimmy Capullo is obviously an amazing maker, but when he did that sort of like that headstock design, he was smoking. He was.
It's hard, though.
Yeah.
It's so difficult. I mean, it's really hard to make a headstock. Like, I was talking to Jake Sarek about this at Bass Bash in Chicago, yeah. And he was saying, man, he had all these iterations, and he tried to use a little, you know, inspiration from Rickenbacker and then something else, and he made something that he really likes, and I love it, too. I think it's beautiful, but it's really, really hard to do. And look, there are people that might love that AC headstock.
Well, here's the deal, dude. I actually like it because it's ugly. Like, that's...
Dude, yes!
It's like, love the underdog, and that headstock is... Like, I actually love it because it's ugly. And there was a time in my life... Yeah, there was a time in my life where I was just like, that headstock just kills me. But I've come to sort of, like, enjoy the ugly. I imagine it's what Lisa's going to think about me when I'm like 80. She'll look at my wrinkly face. It'll look like a deflated balloon, and she'll be like, she will have come to love the ugly.
Dude, if you're so... Look, I hope that Lisa doesn't feel about you as I feel about the AC headstock. I hope that that's not the case.
Yeah, me too, actually.
Oh,
me too.
Man.
Kicking me out of bed.
Well, I love that you love it. I love that you love it. And I have actually softened about this. Like, there are definitely more headstocks in my life now that I would not have touched with a 10-foot pole early. It was sort of like traditional headstocks. Like, it was like Fender, Rickenbacker, whatever. Maybe Gibson.
Yeah, yeah.
But then anything that kind of tried to be crazy, I was like, oh, no, no, no. But then as like the 80s and 90s basses have sort of started to creep back into my life, I find that I have a wider acceptance for headstocks, but I struggle with that. Dude, here's what happens with me with a Leva Capullo bass. I see the photo. Oh, it's the beautiful shell pink, dude. That body, it's beautiful. Oh, the way the knobs are laid out, it's beautiful.
That waist.
The bridge, oh, it looks so good. And you come up, you're elevator eyeing. You're going from the bottom floor, dude, to floor 11, right? You're like, oh, this is incredible. You're going
look
up.
Look at the fingerboard. The neck looks amazing.
The fingerboard is incredible. Yeah, there's probably some clay dots in there, you know.
Right there.
You're going up. And then you finally make it to the headstock. You see the face. This is a bad... I'm regretting this analogy. I'm regretting this. Dude, I regret it. Dude, I regret this so much. But it's just true, dude. I see it on the photo, and I go up, and then I'm disappointed. That's all I'm going to say. It's disappointing to me. And I regret it. But it's true. It's just true.
Dude, I think it's totally fine to share. It's totally fine to share. We should share what we've been up with for the last 2 weeks as well, because it's been carnage.
Dude, it has. And it's really fun to see you again. I've got to say, it's really fun to see you again, because I feel like every waking moment together for the last 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It was essentially sun up to sun down. It was Scott and Ian just like, palling around, dude, just making content, just driving through torrential rainstorms, slapping the bass,
going to Andy Baxter's.
Oh my God. Yes.
It was a trip, man. Finding that 68 jazz. Let's rewind for everybody. So if you haven't heard, and you haven't because we didn't tell anybody, but Ian was over in the UK and we were filming an amazing course that we are super pumped about called the Slap Accelerator. And the idea was born out of the pub, because all great ideas are born out of the pub. And
that's right.
Ian was over, like, you were over here a few months ago, and Eric, who heads up education at SBL, Ian and myself were hanging out in my local pub. And we were talking about, hey, we should do another accelerator. And then I think it was Eric was just like, you know what? You know what's better than anything? Slap bass. or something along those lines. And we were like, yeah, slap bass is amazing. We should do this slap bass. It's awesome. And so yes, we decided to create this sort of like epic slap bass accelerator program, which is going to be something like, how many weeks long is it going to be? 18 weeks long or something?
Something like that. I thought it was 16, 18, something like that. It's a beast.
It's
so fun. Dude, and I remember when we were in that pub, you were like, what's the next accelerator? And I was like, well, how about the metronome? How about you say, we're going to take a beat every, we're going to set the metronome to 30 BPM. We're going to play some whole notes. We're really going to lock in. And I remember, you know, Scott, like a few ciders in, is like, nah, what if it was slap bass? And I was like, slap bass, dude? Like, I was thinking about it so academically. I was thinking about, and I still think it would be good to do something on groove, something on metronome, right? But then there was this idea of, like, what if we lean into a style? What if we lean into a technique? What if we really lean into fun? And we just started to have a blast thinking about how we could make a slap bass accelerator. So it was you, man. I mean, because I was like, well, yes, we'll provide. There will be many metronome exercises.
Eric egged it on. I'm sure that Eric was there. Well, Eric was there, but I'm sure that he was like, yeah, I'm sure he was a big part of it as well. But it's been a while. We did it. So Ian came over to the UK and recorded this thing. We were in the studio every single day for hours and hours, like five, six, 7 or 8 days back to back. And it was dripping hot. There was blood, sweat. Well, there was no tears and no blood, but there was a lot of sweat went into this.
Dude, hold on. Hold on. There were a few tears of joy.
Oh, there were tears. There were tears of joy, weren't there? Ian and I, we just sat down because we'd never actually recorded anything with each other before in the room. We sat down and we started like slapping the bass. We started slapping the basses and like together and playing. And it was like, oh crap, this might be the best thing ever.
So fun. Yes. Like, I don't know if you've ever, any of you listening, obviously, like, you play music with other people and you go, oh, this is why we play music. It's not to do it alone, right? It's especially as a bass player. I mean, obviously you can have a solo career and do it yourself. I know there are people that do that, but it's really an ensemble instrument, right? It's meant to be played with a group, but you never play with other bass players typically, right? At least I haven't really almost ever, never. Or maybe, you know, or in a lesson environment, if you're taking a lesson or giving a lesson, right, there's that. And let's play the scale together. But never like playing a piece of music. And Scott and I wrote all these bass lines. And then we just sat down, plugged into our respective little amps behind us and started playing. And like Scott and I are ear players. Wouldn't you agree? Like our ears, that's the thing that is sharp. And Scott has an amazing ear. I feel like I have an excellent ear. So someone would start to play something and the other one would just hop on. And we found that we were playing things in unison together and it sounded good. and then we would go up and do a fill. And I'll never forget, like I played, you know, kind of this like Marcus ripoff fill and Scott went up and did it a third higher. And like
just randomly, wasn't it?
Because he knew, dude. And you anticipated what I was gonna do, and your move was to not copy it, but actually harmonize with it. And I was like, ah! And I mean, we just like looked at each other, dude. And I feel like I got misty. I started to mist up, dude. I had tears.
It was so good, wasn't it?
Insane.
It was so good, fun, man.
It was so fun. Yes. And it was also scorchingly hot there.
It was scorchingly hot. Yeah. Scorchingly hot.
For everybody in America, just check this out. The UK has no AC. There is no AC almost anywhere. Cars, yes. You're like, I wonder if it's in cars. It is.
Hotels.
But it is not. Hotels, yes. Although that place that I stayed, there were floors that didn't have it. And they were like, hey, would you like to be,
on an aircon
at the Crown Plaza? Yeah. Hey, man. They didn't say, hey, man. They probably said, hey, mate, do you want to be on a floor that has aircon? And I was like, yes. Is that an option? Please. Yes. The studio that we're working in, you guys bought like a little R2-D2, like a little like mobile kind of aircon AC unit.
Yeah.
But I mean, I bet... I'm going to put it in Fahrenheit, but I bet when we close those doors and hit the red button, lights on and all that, I bet it got over 100. I bet it hovered between 100 and 110 in that studio, which would be what, between, I don't know what that would be UK, but between 35 and 45?
Yeah, 35, 40, yeah, yeah. It's freaking hot. Dude, freaking boiling hot, yeah. But it was it was fun, man. It added to the experience. I will always remember it because of that as well. And for me, like, I practiced a lot going up. I had to get my slap chops together because I didn't have any slap stuff together at all. Like you might have seen me play videos on YouTube and stuff like that where I've done a little bit of slap bass, but in terms of like doing an entire sort of like multiple month long program all focused on slap bass, where we're talking about the styles of like Marcus Miller and Larry Graham and double thumbing and all of that stuff, I was just like way under where I needed to be. So I had to like practice a lot going into it. And didn't know how it was going to fly. When the camera goes on, like, was it going to work? You know, and it did. And I was like, holy crap, it did work. And because obviously I've said to you that I'm just sort of like a massive fan of like how you approach slap bass and stuff. And that's been a big inspiration for me over the last 12 months, learning how to do this better. And sitting next to you and doing it and feeling like, oh, I've got this together, felt so great. Yeah. I was like, woo, sigh of relief.
I mean, it's thank you. But it's crazy to hear you say that because I, too, was really practicing. I mean, I think that slap bass for me was something that I really, like, worked on and strived to do well as a teenager. But then... And it's sort of like riding a bike, right? If you really, really work on something and you're playing, it never like completely goes away. But I remember thinking, oh yeah, no worries. But then Scott wrote all these riffs. I wrote some, Scott wrote a lot. I mean, I think you probably wrote, I would say 60 to 70% of this course.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh yeah, I can kind of slap the bass. It's all good. And then I remember like checking out the riffs and going, oh God, because even if it's not like, even if someone writes a riff that isn't necessarily like the hardest thing in the world, it's always in their style.
It's so in Scott their wrote style, something. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
And if it's and so out Scott of your style, things, it crushes you.
It's brutal. And yeah. I remember like, oh, he's putting the pop here. Well, I would double thumb that, but we're not talking about double thumb yet. So I really had to work too, man. I brought, you know, because I'd taken this vacation to Montana to see my dad. I brought a bass on the plane. And dude, I was up late at night, like trying to be quiet, like slapping the bass. Like, oh my God, I have to get this together down at the lake, kids in the water, and I've got the bass out, you know, by the campfire, like play us a tune. It's like, no way, I have to slap the bass. Like, I have to get this together. But yeah, it was really cool to like, you were so sweet to say that about like, you know, how I've inspired you or you like my style or whatever.
Oh, you have, dude.
I would say the same, man. Because, but for me too, it's the same because you would write these things and I would be like, oh my God, you're a killing riff writer too, man. I mean,
dude, I love writing riffs.
You're so good at it. Like you would write these killing riffs and I'd be like, damn. And then we'd be playing them together in studio and I would just be like, Scott, you have to like, this needs to go on a record or like, Scott, should we be in a slap bass duo band together?
Yeah, Ian and I have been like seriously having this, well, this is happening, but we've been talking about doing like a slap bass duo thing, but like as a band, right? And my ultimate dream is to do it on both of us playing Cubicy Factors. Because it would be so 80s. If anybody doesn't know, Ian's going to grab his Cubicy Factor right now. Oh, look at it. Both of us on Cubicy Factors. How cool, dude. It'd be so fun.
I'm making jet sound effects like an 8-year-old.
Man, it's going to be awesome. It's going to be awesome. We've got to figure it
out. Yes,
it is. We've got to figure it out. I really want to do it. Even if it was just sort of like a three tunes for an EP or something like that. And we've got like cool videos with it, something like that. But I have got like a specific visual, like it's Cubicy Factors. There are sunglasses, like big wraparound sunglasses involved. There's like neon involved. you know, it's, I think it'd be so
just lean into childhood so hard.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, all of it. All of it. It's going to be wild. I'm trying to think of what else to mention on that trip. Well, we did that, didn't we? And like, if anybody's asking, thinking, when's that Slap Bass Accelerator coming out? It's coming out like fall time or autumn time for anybody in the UK. So like probably like November time, something like that. So definitely keep a lookout for that. And then, and just to put it out there as well, like without a shadow of a doubt, this is going to be the coolest and most like deepest slap bass course ever produced in history,
100%.
In the history of bass, without a shadow of a doubt. And it's going to, and it is a scream as well. And Ian and I present all of the lessons together and giggle like children. So it's going to be, you're going to have a bunch of fun.
It is so fun. And it's so comprehensive. I mean, I don't want it to turn into an ad for it, but I do really feel that. Like when we set out to do it, I have really high expectations of something like this. Because I went through the Alexis Klarevsky slap bass program. Shout out to anybody out there who had that VHS, which was excellent. And I was like, oh, well, it has to be better than that. And that to me was a really high benchmark, actually. I think the production on that and the content is really excellent. That's what actually taught me how to slap the bass. And I think we did it. I am very confident that that program, like if you've always wondered, I wonder if I should learn how to do it. It sounds pretty fun. Or maybe you've gone through a time where you're like, oh, slap bass is stupid, but secretly way deep down, it's just like you're saying that because you actually can't do it. And if you could do it, then you could play that stuff. And on the wedding gig or whatever, like you can do the right thing for Uptown Funk or, you know, like, it's such a cool technique. And we've said this, we're talking about this a lot, like, it's so unique to the bass. Now, yes, I know that Tobin Abasi is out there, like, slapping the guitar. And yes, I know that Reggie Wooten, Victor's brother, slapping the guitar. I mean, that's a thing. And yeah, people, you know, well, you can slap a lot, you know, you slap the upright bass. But the sound of slapped electric bass is so unique to the instrument. Yeah, you can't really do it on anything else. You can't slap a piano. Now somebody's going to say, well, of course, you can take the top off and use a mallet. Shut up. I don't want to hear that.
Shut up, your face.
like you know what I mean. Everybody out there is like, yeah, like the sound of slap bass is so distinct. And it's the only thing that you can do it on. And so if you play the bass, why not enjoy that celebratory aspect of the bass? I mean, you've talked about this, Scott, where it's like, it's a celebration. I think maybe Marcus Miller was saying something.
It was
about
that conversation that I had with Marcus. Yeah. He was like, this is a celebration of the instrument. And honestly, to your point earlier, I feel like I've missed out. I was one of those players and I was like, well, I don't really do slap bass. I do a little bit to teach it, but I don't really do slap bass. And having to put this together and do all of the research and create all of these lessons has been like, it's like a full on, like, come to Jesus moment. If that's what, you know, that kind of thing. I'm like, oh, this is amazing. Like, this is amazing. And weirdly, I got to hang out with Marcus just like a few weeks, right? Before we did the program, and I was talking to him and he was like, so I went down like this whole Marcus Miller rabbit hole and I was like, oh, this is incredible. And just to, just to sort of like the cherry on the cake, let's just like bring this up. I know, I apologize.
Scott has been born again. You've been born again,
dude.
You've been baptized by the slap bass, dude.
Oh.
Mm. Luther Vandross?
Yeah. Like, and that's, and we talk about this a lot in the program, that it doesn't have to be like, I mean, you can play great, really awesome bass lines just with your thumb. Yeah. Oh, don't you love like long 80s intros? What happened to them? Do I mean, like,
got it.
I think it's
gotta
like ran for like
2:45 cut for radio, man. You got to get that shit out of there. That's what they decided.
I think it's like nearly 40 seconds before Luther comes in on that.
So cool.
We need to go back there. We're going to make it happen with our band, with the Kubiki Neon band.
Yeah, dude, everybody's going to love that. Like, check it out, you guys. These two dudes are making tunes with 40-second intros, man. It's awesome.
And it's slap bass, and there's neon and Kubikis involved.
You guys, there were moments on the trip where, like, we were playing in that blazing hot studio, playing blazing hot licks, even if I do say so myself, which I do, where Scott would turn to me and go, with these wide eyes, like a child on Christmas morning, he would say to me, I'm only going to play slap bass. Yeah.
I am actually, I'm going to be a slap bass player.
You're like, this is all I want to do now. This is it. Only slap bass.
Only slap bass. People would be like, hey, do you want to do a gig? I'd be like, yeah. What kind of thing is it? And then they'll be like, they'll answer. I'll be like, because like I only play slap bass, so if that's cool, I'll do the gig.
Dude, I mean, I mean, credit to Marcus for this idea of a celebration of the instrument.
Yeah.
Because it's such a great statement about what it is. It's just, I mean, I have always said things about, and I'm sure other people have said this before, like, it's a technique, it's a sound, and I'm really a fan of doing the right thing for the song. So, in that regard, I have always looked at slap bass as a tool. It's a technique, just like a pick. I love playing with a pick. I obviously love playing with my fingers, muted thumb, but it's about using the right technique for the song. But slap bass has this layer of fun. There's like a notch of like where it's a little bit self-indulgent at times,
yeah.
And it's a little bit like flashy, right? Or it can be. And it's kind of a way that bass players communicate, you know, like I'm a badass on the bass, or that's sometimes I get that sense of when people are really slapping, they're showing you, they're communicating the things that they can do on the instrument.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's a little different, I think, than a pick, a little different than fingers. It's edges towards, right?
This sums it up for everybody. Nobody will be able to argue with this statement here, right? Or this, I guess, sort of like story of yes. how, yeah. A way of, I guess, sort of like showing how awesome slap bass is. Okay, so I've played bass all around my house for all of the years that my kids have been alive, right? There's always a bass in the house. Yes. There's always a bass in the house. I'm always playing, okay? And the amount of times that I've played in front of, like, both kids must have been thousands over their lifetimes. My daughter's 7, my son's 9. Thousands of times. And my daughter has picked up the bass and tried to play it all of, I think, 0 times. Okay.
Yeah, now, yes.
0. Okay. So, but the slap accelerator was coming. I needed to start shedding. So I'm sitting there in the living room.
Yeah,
thumbs are twinkling. You know, it's out. It's slapping the bass. I'm slapping. And like Winter, my little girl, she's sitting there watching me. And she's like, she comes over and she's like, Daddy, do you get lessons? I'm like, well, yeah, sometimes. I learn from people and I can learn from YouTube as well. And I'm like, why? And she was like, I've never seen you doing that before. I was like, all right. Okay, yeah, this is called slap bass. Anyway, like a little while goes by. I walk through into the room. She sat there with the little mini bass, her thumbs out, and she's trying to freaking slap the bass.
Yes.
It can convert 7-year-olds into bass players. If that isn't cool, nothing is.
Dude, it's so cool. It's so cool. Yeah. And I mean, man, I went through this time in my life where I was like, no, write for the tune. But you have to go through, I think that every player should go through a tune of be, or a time, I'm sorry, you should go through a time, an era in your playing of being tasteless, 0 taste. You're not playing for the song. You're not playing for, you know what I mean? You are just having a blast. You're getting the techniques down. You're playing too many notes. You're slapping ferociously. You're right. All that stuff. You're tapping. You're working out chord melodies on the, you know, like that stuff becomes then the vocabulary. Then as you get older and you play it, you know, it's about stripping things away. But I remember when I first started to teach at this college, I would say I really discouraged, if I had it to do all over again, I would do it differently, because I really discouraged people from, like, obviously, you know, I want you to practice. But I would discourage people from doing too much. Ooh, that's not appropriate. Ooh, I was really like the appropriate police. I was like, oh, you know, make sure you want to get hired. So make sure that you're playing for the song always. And of course, I believe that. But I do think you have to separate your time in the shed, or the time that you're playing, practicing, playing for you, and then the time on the gig or time in the studio. Obviously, you don't want to show up to somebody's thing and slap the shit out of the bass when it's not appropriate. But I will say this, there are players out there today that make me question that. Like, remember when there's a great Thundercat interview, I think for Vox or something, where he's talking about he's playing with maybe Chris Dave, and Chris Dave is like, hey man, you know, don't slap the bass.
Yeah.
But when Thundercat slaps the bass, it's awesome to me. It's awesome.
I think slap bass, well, we talked about this, right? I think that slap bass got made a little uncool because of various reasons, and it maybe had its day. I think it's coming around.
It's back, baby.
Freaking back. And it's going to be headed up by two bald dudes in Kubicki factors.
Like people are going to be like, oh, is it back?
In all seriousness, you know, I really do believe that everybody should. Like, I was wrong. I was wrong about it. I think that it's just such fun and really has its place. And I think that a lot of people have been wrong about it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, here's another thing. If you're still going, I don't know. It's not really for me. Even just the endeavor of coordinating your hands, striking the string in time versus pulling through a string in time. You really learn, everybody learns how to do that, right? Like pulling through, you know, in the right time. But it's difficult to like commit to that strike in the right time. And if you can get a slap line to groove, slapping, popping, double thumbing, whatever it is, it's like you're playing drums, and there is a magnifying glass on you in terms of your time feel.
Yeah.
So it's like, even though, you know, I suggested, you know, oh, a metronome, like, oh, we need to do one on time, groove, metronome, an accelerator. We sort of did, in a way, with the slap bass one, right? Because it's really difficult to play that stuff and make it sit and make it feel excellent and not always be filling up the space with crazy 16th note stuff that once you have, it's just a pattern. Yeah. It's difficult to play bass lines like that thing, that Luther Vandross track with a young Marcus Miller that Scott just played here on the pod. Like, that is a difficult line to play because it requires precision. You have to commit to a thumb strike in a different way that you commit to playing, you know, bass, standard bass, quote unquote, with your fingers. It's so good for you. And it's hella fun. It's so fun.
Dude, it really is. It really is. We should also mention as well the Andy Baxter trip that we went on.
Oh, my God.
So, like, at the end of this sort of, like, recording stint that we were doing, we got to – there's a vintage bass shop in Leeds, which is where I live, and it's probably, like, the best vintage bass shop in the UK. Ian, you've been sort of, like, geeking out there. Jim, dude, so, like, shout out to Jim, who was producing us for the he was producer for the Slap Accelerator. So, like, Jim's a massive, like, bass nerd as well. Dr. Jim, should I say, because he's got a PhD in music. So we all jumped in the car and we headed down, with Alan as well, headed down to Andy Baxter's bass shop, which was just amazing. And he had all of the basses. He had, like, vintage, well, all of them, like 60s Fender Jazzes, 60s P's, 70s Jazzes, 70s P, like all the way through Lachlan's, Rickenbackers. Like, definitely check him. I can't remember what the website is.
I think it's Andy Baxter Bass.
Let me just find Andy Baxter Bass.
As Scott's looking that up, I was trying to describe that. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I was trying to describe this to my kids. Like, oh, what else did you do? You know, talking about the UK trip. I'm like, we went to this store. It's actually in this man's lovely home. And Mr. Baxter, what a lovely home you have. I mean, he's got the instruments in this incredible, like kind of a shed, but it's more than a shed. It is the Holy Land, man. I mean, it's unreal.
I'm on his website. Oh,
yeah. So I said, imagine if you went to a place where all of the things that you love were they, like all of the things that are super rare, like my daughter loves Star Wars action figures from a certain time period. Yeah, and my son loves like Hot Wheels cars and Lego sets that are discontinued from a certain era.
Yeah.
I was like, imagine you go into a place and all of the things that you've only seen on the internet that are prohibitively expensive on eBay or wherever you're looking, they're just there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you, so your brain is like, because you're trying to compute, like, oh, wow, that color's a little different in person. Oh, that line, the way the body contour is. Wow. Even before you get it in your hands, and then you can touch it.
Ian descended into massive, just like I've never seen or heard somebody like so excited and knowledgeable and geeky about vintage basses. It was honest. I even spoke about it yesterday with Lisa. Was it Lisa or somebody else? I was like, oh, it was Lisa, my dad. I was like, Ian was telling about the undercoat of these Fender basses. I was like,
the paint job. Yeah.
Why the red looked different. I was like, it was amazing. It really was. I actually came away, like we've talked about doing gear on the YouTube channel.
Yeah.
I think it would be a disservice to the bass community not to get your brain and put that in video format talking about, you know, all of the stuff that you were talking about that day. I think that it would be a real disservice. We need to figure that out because I think
we need to do it.
Yeah, people are gonna be so excited about it. I am just looking here. I was just checking to see if that bass is still in, dude. That 1968 Fender jazz bass that you fell in love with, it's still there.
Oh, I know. Oh, and I mean, you don't think I haven't emailed with Andy back and forth about it a couple times. I mean,
oh boy,
look. I found a 68, and it's funny because if you know my content at all, you might know, I don't want to presume that you know, but that, you know, I have a 68 jazz bass. It's the beat up sunburst one that's wearing flats. This one is in lovely condition and it has rounds. And it was like, I said to Scott, it was like there's twins and one twin goes off for a path of debauchery, dude. I mean, just hard partying, eating indiscriminately, right? And then the other one.
This is yours, isn't it?
And that's your mine. Base. Mine is the indiscriminate bad twin.
Party boy.
Like just, dude, just thugging it, man. Eating whatever, just maybe
whiskey all day, kebabs all night.
yeah. Doing whatever it needs to do to get a buck. I mean, just out there living hard, dude. But the other one is waking up at 5 a.m. That bass that Andy has is going for a jog, dude. It's doing a 5K every morning and eating only hard-boiled eggs and acai bowls. That's that bass, dude. And playing it was like, whoa, it was so wild because it was so familiar, but yet this other example, and I just... I got a headache. I came out of Andy Baxter, and my head was like... just pounding because
vintage
it was
bass
so
headache.
Much, dude, it was so much stimuli. I mean, like, I couldn't even think straight. I mean, it was amazing. And it was so fun. You were playing stuff and having revelations, and Jim, our producer Jim, who's a killing bass player, was playing and having revelations, and you know, and of course Alan, shout out to Alan, who was there just spinning the camera around trying to catch you know, all the fun moments. It was incredible. We're gonna make that into a YouTube video, right?
We absolutely are, yeah. I'm just on the shop now. Did they have three 66s in?
Yeah, they did. They had three 66s.
I didn't try these.
That's because there were so many amazing instruments that you just didn't even know what to do.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think you're right, yeah. There's a lovely one here for like £6,000. It's like the basically the it's the price of a car.
I know. I mean,
it is an expensive hobby, isn't it? But it looks really nice. It does look really nice. Maybe we should go again. Dude, we'll come again. When you come over next time, let's just go to Andy's. Before we do anything else, let's just go to Andy's and hang out, because he'll be well up for it. And we want to do a couple more videos with Andy as well. So definitely watch out for that on the YouTube channel, because, yeah, like, we're trying to figure out in SBL land, in the world of SBL, what we can do to kind of like fulfill everybody's gear needs. So, for instance, like, yes, from a content perspective, right, creating YouTube content around gear is definitely within our peripheral vision right now. We're excited about it. We want to do it. We don't know whether we need to do it on our channel or to spin up another channel. We just don't know. But that is something that we really want to do. So if you have any feedback, just message in, you know, hit Ian up on Instagram, or message into SBL. And let us know that, and just say we mentioned it on the podcast, and make sure the message gets to Scott and Ian, because we were asking about it. But we've got sort of like, we want to like do some content based stuff for sure. But then also we were like throwing around ideas like, is there an let me just throw some sort of like stuff up into the air, see if anything sticks, right? Is there an SBL base shop? Is that a thing? Like, or do we have a marketplace? Is there an SBL marketplace where people can buy and trade gear, much like reverb.com, but just for bass players and second, like, I'm not sure what it is, but we need your help. So definitely let us know if you've got any ideas, if any of that kind of sort of like lights a fire under your ass or whatever, and makes you want to sort of like come and give us a virtual high five. Let us know, and we'd be really all ears to those ideas. And talking about content as well, we should also mention what we ended up finishing the trip off with, because what we're trying to do is, with our YouTube content, So Ian and I love the podcast, as you probably already know, right?
Yes, we really
love creating the podcast, and we're going to carry on doing that. What we want to do is bring that kind of sort of like hang, like vibe, like, you know, it's a hang vibe to the YouTube channel in some way. So because we've had so many, you know, great comments about like the podcast, but we don't think it would work in this format, just on the main channel and YouTube, because it's just us talking. We're not playing bass or anything like that. So we started thinking about what we could do, and came up with the idea of a talk show. And what we did after we'd recorded the Slap Accelerator is we went down to London to record 3 episodes of this new talk show that we're trying to put together, or putting together. And this is kind of a lot of different sort of like inspirations that I want to give a shout out to. Professional Musicians React with Jack Conti and Ryan Lerman, now called Dead Wax. So if you've seen their YouTube channel, that was really inspirational.
Incredible.
Top Gear, which is Top Gear, which is a UK or was a UK based show based on cars, that was really great. And pulling from all of these inspirations, we've come up with this like long form talk show idea that we've done 3 episodes for. The big idea, I'll tell you who they are in a minute, the guests that we had on, but the big idea is to get these up on the YouTube channel, but then go out to LA and do, you know, a bunch more episodes, maybe like 10 to 20 episodes. But, so we went down to London, we had this freaking awesome studio that Nick sorted out. Like, shout out to Nick at SBL, who does a lot of the wrangling of all of the production stuff. Nick fixed up this really fantastic studio. What was the studio called?
Fiction
Studios in London. So check that out if you want to see where we're recording this. On day one, our first guest was Guy Pratt, who's played with Michael Jackson. He was the bass player on Earth Song. He also is the bass player for Pink Floyd and a bunch of other artists like Tears for Fears and stuff like that.
Madonna.
He also was Madonna. What track did he do with Madonna?
Like a Prayer.
Like a Prayer with Madonna. So if you listen to Like a Prayer, that's Guy Pratt playing on that. So he came into the studio and we did this like long form talk show with him. He had his bass, he had his pedal board. He and I are talking about, we're listening to all of the tracks that he's played on. He's telling us about the stories when he was in the studio, how he approached the effects and stuff like that in the studio. Justin Hawkins from The Darkness is a guest on that episode. Booyah! Shout out to Nick again. Come on.
So cool.
Yeah, so that was episode one, and then episode two was, we had Henrik Linde from Dirty Loops in. Again, we were listening to all of the Dirty Loops tracks. He's talking about his approach and he's breaking down the bass lines and, oh, that's amazing. And then on the final episode, we got Rob Malarkey and Richard Spaven in. So we got a rhythm section in. Rob Malarkey's the bass player for Jacob Collier. Richard Spaven is an artist in his own right, but also has worked with the likes of Jose James, which Rob Malarkey was in that band as well. And like, they are like one of the, if not the most exciting rhythm section coming out of London right now. And they heavy. Just blew freaking minds. They just
heavy.
Tore my yes. face off that day. So it's those guys playing that track. We're listening to the tracks. And then like, Ian, you were on fire that day. You were just like, right, break this down. How are you thinking about
Dude,
this?
I was.
It was amazing. It was amazing.
I was. Those guys are so cool. They've got this like, they've got that like chill, like under the surface, like UK dry wit and humor. Yeah, and I'm like, hey, fellas. It's just like this American, like, break down that groove for me, man. I mean, just like they were kind of side eyeing me, but it was so cool, dude. And also, I have to say about this talk show, we have for a long time. I mean, I remember when I came on SBL, Scott was, you were so cool, dude, to be like, what do we need to do? And I remember just saying, I mean, this sounds so dumb, but I want to just have more fun. And so we've been at it for a few years to figure out what that means.
Yeah.
And it was so fun to develop this show and then have the other producers, Nick, shout out, Lydia, shout out, yeah. Sharon, to start to come up with some ideas. Like I had some ideas, you had some ideas, and then they really made it happen. So we're doing this thing. We're doing a string change challenge. So like, just imagine if you've ever wanted to see Henrik Linde, like start with a crappy bass with no strings and try to put strings on it under the gun of a timer. And then I'm asking him rapid fire trivia questions like a pub quiz or like a trivia night. It's so fun. And it's so fun. And we weren't sure, like, will these serious artists think this is stupid? Will they not want to do it? And guess what? Who doesn't like a little bit of fun? Everybody likes fun, right? So they're all into it. Even Malarkey and Spaven were like totally into it. And it just goes to show that like, as long, I feel like we're honoring their artistry, right? We're asking them good questions. We're playing the tracks, we're reacting, we're having so much fun, they're breaking stuff down, and then at the end, we make them go through a hellish challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You
know? And it's a blast. It's a blast.
Yeah, it is. And again, you know, you said it, but massive shout out to Sharon as well, because Sharon's our producer, and she's going to be on them shows with us. And she, there was a hilarious moment in the Rich Spaven Rob Malarkey episode and a t-shirt Sharon was wearing. You have to check out the show to find out what happened there, but quintuplets were involved, and then shout out to Lydia as well, who was, it was great actually. Lydia came over actually earlier in the week, so again, like, Lydia's head of content SBL, she came over, she was hanging out in Leeds with us, so we had a great hang. We had a good few nights in the pub, having big pub meals, and then she came and hung out in London, which was really fantastic. And shout out to Dan, actually. Don't want to miss out Dan. Because Dan was making the magic happen on the cameras. He was like head of videographer that day, VP, I think they call them. He was heading up video on that day, and then shout out to Tubby as well, who was also on cameras that day. But it was a really fantastic experience, and we're excited. We're really, really freaking excited about this this type of content that we're going to be bringing to the YouTube channel. And we would absolutely love it if you would support it. Obviously, if you like it. If you don't like it, you'd have to support it. But if you do like it, it would be amazing if you can get it and literally forward it to bass players that you know and say, hey, you know, these guys need a bit of support with this, because we're trying to make content that is remarkable for the bass community. Mm-hmm. And I mean remarkable by people remark on it. They want to tell other people about it because of the work that we've put into it. And it's, you know, just hand on heart, it's hellishly expensive to do these. So, and that's why we would love the entire bass community to show up and share these as much as possible. So we have your support and then we can create more of them. We're doing them, you know, we're not asking for any, these are completely free. They're going on the YouTube channel completely free. Yep. You know, the amount of work that we've put into these, we could absolutely, you know, put them behind some kind of paywall and say these are just for like members only. But we're so into this content and believe so much in it that we want to put it out there for the entire bass community to enjoy. And our hope is that you guys, you know, get behind this content, share it among yourselves, and we get to produce as much of this like talk show type content as possible. Could this be a weekly thing? Like, you know, maybe that's what we're shooting for. That's what we're shooting for. It would be,
Be and wild. We want it to be valuable. We want it to bring you value. We want you to learn something from it, and we want you to laugh.
Yeah.
And if you learn something and you laugh, I mean, I'm happy. That's all I want. I want it. We want to break things down. So you're like, whoa, that's crazy. I learned something today. And I want you to laugh when you see Rob Malarkey answer questions while he's trying to like wind an E string onto a peg to beat his previous opponent.
I was going to ask, did he beat, but we shouldn't mention it because they're going to have to wait for the leaderboard. There's a whole leaderboard. I actually think we should get a chalkboard and do it like real Top Gear style. They had a chalkboard. They used to write people's names on. It was awesome. Oh, love Top Gear.
And dude, I only had heard about Top Gear. And then on the plane back, I watched a couple episodes because I had it on the plane. It's the best.
It's cool, dude.
It's so good. It's so funny. It's that perfect blend. It's like what I've always wanted about a show.
Yeah.
Where it's geeky. It's digging into something. These guys are so enthusiastic about cars. It makes me just want to get geekier. I don't love cars necessarily, but it makes me want to learn about cars. It makes me want to learn even more about the instruments that I have. And they're having so much fun. They're so self-deprecating. You fall in love with these characters. I mean, I'm just preaching to the choir if you know this show. I'm just like, I don't know, 20 years too late to it or whatever. But it's incredible. And so now my life's goal is to make the bass version of Top Gear.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be, I think, I've got all my fingers crossed, man. I think it's going to be wicked. And again, if you guys can share it and stuff like that, that would be really fantastic. I'm not sure. We'll be speaking to Lydia tomorrow. And she will give us the lowdown on when these are going to be going on the YouTube channel. And then we will let you know in the next episode, because we're going to be recording a few more episodes anyway, because we're a little bit behind on the podcast. Shout out to all of the production team and the content team for putting up with Ian and I being late with these podcasts. But we've been busy
making product, baby. We've been making product.
It's been wild. It's been wild. But also as well, let us know again. We should get maybe sort of like some kind of messaging tool together for you listeners on the podcast, so you can communicate with us better. I'm sure that there's a tool that we can figure out. Let me think about that. But you know, in a ghetto way, if you want to see people on the talk show, feel free to reach out. You know, we've got a support desk over at Scott's Bass Lessons. Shout out to Laura, or you can message us in on Instagram. Ian can catch it. You know. Messaging at the SBL or SBL, obviously, and let us know which guests you would like on this talk show. Like, I would like everybody, like all of the heavy hitters. I would love Thundercat to be on there, Flea to be on there, Pino Palladino to be on there, you know, Les Claypool to be on there, Robert Trujillo. These are all the people that I would love on this talk show, so we can find out what they're actually like and have a hang. You know, and I mean find out what they're actually like in a cool way, because I don't think that's, you know, when you see people hanging out, that's when you really get a vibe for who they are. And I'm absolutely convinced that all of these guys will be really fantastic individuals and will be open to sharing their craft and what they do in a much deeper way. And also having a laugh with the string change challenge and all of that good stuff as well. And I think that right now is a moment in time where everybody needs to sort of like stand up as well and just sort of like a bit of a hat tip to Bass Player magazine as well, because they're actually closing now. Like, this is it. The last episode of Bass Player magazine was printed. They will never be printed again. And that is freaking sad. I think it's really sad because I think of what they gave to the bass community over the years was just such incredible value. And also all of the trade shows that they were part of, you know, I know that Bass Player magazine, it was like Future Publishing here in the UK were like, they were the publishers behind Bass Player magazine for the last part of that. And, Future Publishing, they were the team behind the London Bass Guitar Show, which was an incredible, massive bass guitar show here in the UK that was so wild to be a part of over the last few years. And now that's gone. Obviously Bass Player Live, that shut up shop a few years ago. Over in the US, I think there's an amazing opportunity for something else to come from that. I think that it's, you know, a huge hat tip to Bass Player magazine for all of they did.
Absolutely.
But hopefully we can pick some of that up and run with it. And so, you know, the bass community still has a home and somewhere to congregate around. So yeah, I'm really excited for the future.
Me too. Yeah, absolutely, dude, man.
Should we call it?
I think that's it.
Let's call it, dude. That was the show, guys. Thanks for listening. You can find us in all of the usual places. Obviously, if you want to take your bass playing to the next level, come to Scott's Bass Lessons. Sign up for that free trial over there. We will take care of you with hugs and bass shenanigans and all of that. And we might even see you on a Monday new member huddle as well. It's something that Ian and I do. Like every Monday we hop on with new members live on Zoom and stuff like that. It'd be great to be be a part of that. If you don't see us there, Jim will be there. Shout out to Jim, who's another amazing member who does those new member huddles as well. And shout out to any new members that have been on there. I absolutely love them new member huddles where we sort of like get to hang on Zoom, man. And meet all of the new students. Yeah. So yeah, go over to scottsbasslessons.com, grab that free trial, come and be a part of what we're putting together. And thanks again for listening to the podcast. We will see you in the next episode. Bye.
Take care, everybody.